Okay, good evening, everybody, and a Yasher Koach to Rabbi Glatt and to all of you for joining us this evening. Unfortunately, this past week, there was a request made of the Free Hebrew Burial Society here in New York that due to the overwhelming number of levayas, of burials that they were involved in, there was a shortage of talesin, and they were asking for our assistance. They asked many, many shuls if they can participate and assist by giving old talesin for them to help for this purpose. So what I'd like to do is spend tonight's shiur trying to discuss this important sugya. I got many emails this week from people who were asking about what the parameters are of old talesim, what are the parameters of old mitzvah items in general. So let's begin as follows. And this is a very important sugya that has not only a relevance to this discussion, but to many other areas of halacha as well. We start off with, as we know, this is the great story about the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer was one of the tremendous gedolim in the end of the 1700s. He passed away in 1839. And the Chasam Sofer, it is told in his biography, the Chut HaMeshulash, that he had a talmid, he had a student who came to get smicha from him. And as the Chasam Sofer was testing him out to see if he was worthy, he was testing his genius and his knowledge and his brilliance, and he wanted to see how well-versed he was in the halachic process. But at the end of the day, the Chasam Sofer decided that he was not going to offer him smicha. And it was a big surprise, it was a big shock to all of those who knew this Talmud, who knew this student. After all, they knew he was a very diligent Talmud, he took the learning very seriously, he was a great Talmud Chacham, and they were very surprised why it was that the Chasam Sofer did not ultimately confer smicha upon this great, prestigious Talmud. And the answer the Chasam Sofer said was, because when he walked out of the room, after he was leaving my office, I noticed that he did not kiss the mezuzah. Now you'll say, it sounds like a subtlety, but the Chasam Sofer says it shows that there's a certain lack of appreciation for the mitzvah item. As we know, the Ramah says, there's an age-old minhag. Some say it's based on a Gemara Meseches Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara there in the first parak has a story about Unkelus when he was becoming a ger. So some say it's based on that, but wherever the source is, the Ramah writes, that we have an age-old practice that people kiss the mezuzah when walking by it. When they walk in a room, out of a room, that's what they do. Some even have the practice to say a tefillah, not just to kiss the mezuzah, but to say some kind of tefillah. Hashem yishmar tzeischa vo'echa me'ata bi'ad olam, whatever it may be. But the Chasam Sofer said, if I'm going to have a student who claims to have the knowledge base, who claims to be a person who's supposed to be a leader of the Jewish community, not only does he need to have that brilliance and that understanding of Torah, but he also needs to have an appreciation for the mitzvahs. And the Chasam Sofer says, if he does not kiss the mezuzah on his way out, that is a telltale sign that there is something lacking in his understanding of what mitzvahs mean to us. The Mishnah Berurah writes in Hilchos Pesach, very surprising comment, but there he says, in the name of the Shalah, Ra'isi b'nei Aliyah, the Mishnah Berurah writes, I have seen the practice of many great people that they used to kiss the matzah, they used to kiss the maror, he writes, that on Leil HaSeder they were so connected to the mitzvahs, they felt so strongly about the opportunity that God gave all of us to perform these mitzvahs at certain junctures in the year, that he writes, he used to notice that people would actually kiss the matzah and kiss the maror on Leil HaSeder. I once saw a couple of years ago a beautiful comment for anyone who's not familiar with the Aderes. He was a prolific author. Many of his writings have not yet been published. There's a whole backstory to that, a whole politics as to where they're hidden and why they haven't been published. They were stolen by a certain yeshiva because, whatever, it's a long story, very interesting. But every couple of years, there are some manuscripts that are stolen back and they publish them. And each one of them is a gem. Each one of them is amazing because the Aderes himself is such an expressive personality. He's so emotional. The Aderes was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Later on in history, he became very world famous because he was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, but that happened much later in his life. He was world famous before that as well. He was the Av Beis Din in Panevish for 19 years. He was considered to be a tremendous leader in Europe in that era, in that generation. And then the Aderes ultimately was called to come to Yerushalayim to take over as the chief rabbi because Rav Shmuel Salant was getting close to the age of 90. The Aderes came to Yerushalayim. In the end, Rav Shmuel Salant outlived the Aderes, so he never was able to become the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. But there are many fascinating experiences that he had after he moved to Yerushalayim. And the Aderis is just a towering personality. He has Svarim on Chumash, he has Svarim on Halacha, he wrote a Sefer on the Minchas Chinuch, he has hundreds of Svarim. One of the beautiful Svarim that I once read was the Sefer Nefesh David, which is one of his writings, directly taken from his manuscripts. And there, the Aderis writes the following. He says that Mitzvah Sukkah, the Mitzvah of Sukkah, was such a beloved Mitzvah to him. And he said it didn't matter how cold it was, it didn't matter how windy it was, it didn't matter what was going on, although it is true that somebody who is under such conditions does not have an obligation to sit in Sukkah, but he said, there was nothing in the world that would ever stop me from performing my mitzvah of Sukkah. I just loved it. And he says, I wouldn't give it up for anything in the world. Lo girshuni min ha-sukkah. The rain, the snow, the freezing weather, the wind would never take me out of the Sukkah. Then the Aderis writes so beautifully how Be'ein Rohim, when nobody was watching, on Shmini Atzeres, as the Yom Tov of Sukkot was coming to a close, Hayisi Menashek Atze HaSukkah. He says, I would walk around the Sukkah and I would kiss every one of the poles, every one of the walls, because I had such a love, such a deep sense of appreciation for what this opportunity of Sukkah meant to me, that I would actually walk around and kiss the walls of the Sukkah. And that's an amazing comment. And it shows the appreciation, the perspective, the attitude, I should say, that a person should have whenever they have the opportunity to observe any mitzvah in any context. Now, that is all with regard to the mitzvah that we are in the middle of engaging ourselves with. So as we said, Mishneh Berurah writes, there are some people who kiss the lulav, they kiss the esrog, they kiss the matzah, they kiss the mar, you kiss the mezuzah. The Aderis writes, he kissed his sukkah. All these are beautiful, but what does one do when they are no longer able to use this item for a mitzvah? So for that, we turn to a Gemara Maseches Shabbos. The same Gemara appears as well in Maseches Brachos on Daf Lamed Tes. And the Gemara there talks about Rab Ami and Rab Asi, that they had a practice, Hol v'neved ba mitzvah chada, neved ba mitzvah achriti. Once we have had the opportunity to perform one mitzvah with this item, we may as well try to use it for another mitzvah, which is why the Mishneh Berurah writes in the laws that govern Havdalah after Shabbos, the Mishneh Berurah writes in Hilchos Havdalah, Siman Reish Tzadi Zayin, that there is an age-old practice that many people take their Hadassim after Sukkot is over, and they leave them aside for Havdalah, for the Besamim, to be used during the rest of the year. Why? We don't have enough money to buy clothes? Of course we have enough money to buy clothes. We can afford that. It's not so expensive. But says the Mishneh Berurah, there's a hider mitzvah. Because since I used the Hadassim for one mitzvah on Sukkot, why dispose of them? Why get rid of them? I may as well use the opportunity to have another mitzvah being done with the very same item. It shows a level of appreciation of that mitzvah item that even after the mitzvah is over, I still can find a very important purpose for this item regardless of whether or not it is Sukkot. So that's why the Mishneh Berurah writes that the practice in many homes, in many communities is that we make sure to use the Hadassim for the Besamim on Matzoi Shabbos even way after the holiday of Sukkot is over. The Ramah writes in Hilchos Pesach that there are many who take away their Hoshanos after they use them on Sukkot and they leave them over until the mitzvah of Bir Chametz comes around on Pesach. Is that because we don't have lighter fluid? Is that because we don't have paper to put into the fire when we're burning the Chametz? Of course we have enough to use. However, he writes, there's a reason why we should go out of our way to use this item. Since we've used it for one mitzvah, we may as well now use it for another. The Hagos Maimoni even writes that the minhag was in many communities that when they had the leftover stems from the Hoshanos, they used to take those and make a quill out of that to write a Sefer Torah. So they used to come up with all kinds of wonderful mitzvah opportunities, whatever they can figure out, whatever they can conjure up in their minds, to have a chance to use the item once again. And that shows a level of respect. It shows a level of appreciation for the mitzvah item. Now we turn to a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. I shouldn't say we turn because I don't have the Gemara in front of me to show all of you, but you can all look it up later. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos on Daf Chaf Beis, in the very beginning of the Masechta, talks about another interesting concept. And there the Gemara is describing the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam. We're not going to get into the details of Kisui Hadam because it's not relevant to this discussion, but the Gemara does tell us, based on the Psukim in Chumash, that there are certain animals that are shechted that require a Kisui Hadam, which means after the blood comes out from the neck, from the shechita, that has to be covered over with dirt. So the Gemara says, Let's say you have a person who doesn't want to get their hands dirty. I happen to be one of those people. I don't enjoy getting my hands dirty. Nothing to do with Corona, nothing to do with Purell, nothing to do with anything that everyone else is worried about. I just don't like being dirty, ever. So, I'm one of those people that the Gemara is describing. Let's say I shecht an animal, which I don't think would ever happen, because I would never want to do that. It's not my kind of thing. Not that I have a problem with shechita, I just have a problem with my hands being the shochet. Not my kind of idea. So, let's say I would be present when the mitzvah of shechita is being done, and then the mitzvah of kisui hadam would be performed, which is a wonderful opportunity. How often do we get the chance to do kisui hadam? So some people do it on Erev Yom Kippur when they do the kaparis, which is a very unusual opportunity that we have to do kisui hadam. How often are we present when an animal or a chicken is being shechted? So we should take advantage of those opportunities and do the mitzvah. So the Gemara says, how should I go about doing the kisui hadam? Says the Gemara, don't be shy shechter, lo yichasena baraglav, don't take the dirt and kick it onto the blood to cover it. Don't think that it's beneath you to get your hands dirty. Take the dirt and do it with respect. Take it with your hands and put it down on the blood the way a mensch is supposed to do it. And don't think that you have to worry about your hands getting dirty. That's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara then challenges that and says, why? Who cares? You think the blood is going to feel bad that I'm kicking my foot when the dirt has to cover it over? Who cares? What's the difference? It's blood. It's on the floor. And the Gemara says, no. Shalotehe mitzvos bezuyo salav. There's a certain attitude that I need to have when I approach all mitzvah items. And even when we're talking about a situation where I need to get my hands dirty, I have to do it in a way that is respectful to the mitzvah. I have to show that this is not something that I'm embarrassed of. And by doing so with my feet, I'm showing that it's beneath me. And therefore the Gemara says we have a concept of bizui ha-mitzvah, which is why in Shulchan Aruch we're told that when one puts on a talis in the morning, they have to make sure, shelo yigaru tzitziyosav, you have to make sure that your tzitzis do not drag on the floor, for the same reason. It's not that the tzitzis are going to feel bad, the tzitzis don't have feelings, but rather the reason why is because I have to show an attitude of respect and appreciation for the mitzvah items that I interact with. It's a privilege to do so. And therefore, the Gemara says, we have a concept of bizui ha-mitzvah. Parenthetically, if anyone has the Sefer Beis HaLevi Al HaTorah, which is a beautiful Sefer, but if you look in Parshas Truma, he has an unbelievable comment. He goes a little off topic there. It's worth reading it on your own, but he says, here we just spoke about a Gemara which says we have to be careful about Bizui HaMitzvah. We have to make sure that when we are involved in Kisui HaDam, or when we put on a talis, or many other examples, we have to make sure that we do it in a respectful manner. We have to make sure we don't show any sort of negative attitude or disrespectful attitude toward that mitzvah item that we are engaged with. Well, says the Beis HaLevi, imagine you have an ani who comes knocking at your door. Or you come into shul one day, remember those days when we used to go to shul, and there would be aniim sitting in the lobby, and many of them you feel terrible for. So he says, but you're in a rush, you got to get to work. And therefore you just throw them a dollar and you walk away, and you forget to say good morning, and you don't offer them a coffee when there's a coffee station right next door. And you don't take care of them, and you don't think about them. Says the Beis HaLevi, if you would show such respect for your esrog, that you would wrap it up carefully, put it in the silver box, and you walk with it to shul so carefully. And when we show respect that you're not allowed to kick the dust for the kisei hadam with your foot, you have to put it down like a mensch with your hands, you have to show an attitude of respect toward the mitzvah. Says the Beis HaLevi, what about when you actually have a mitzvah item in front of you? When you have the ani who has feelings? If we said you have to kiss the esrog, you have to kiss the sukkah, you have to be respectful to the mitzvah items that have no feelings, writes the Beis HaLevi, what about the person who gives you an opportunity to do a mitzvah because they unfortunately are an ani and they need your help? You don't have the decency to be at least as respectful as you would be to an inanimate object? Says the Beis HaLevi, this is a very important consideration that we need to think about, which reminds me as well, let me just go off script for a minute, where the Maharsham writes in one of his tshuvas, an unbelievable story that I will never forget because it's just an amazing story. The Maharsham writes in one of the tshuvas that he remembers he was in a place where a midget walked into the room. And he said, as we know, we've all seen in the Siddur, that when one encounters a midget, which is a very unusual occurrence, they are supposed to make a bracha of Mishana HaBrios. So the Maharsham describes the scene, how it was a big gathering, I don't know if it was a Jewish gathering. I don't know exactly what it was, but he says there were a lot of people there. And all of a sudden, somebody spots on the other side of the room, there's a midget, and he's all excited. I've never made the bracha Mishana HaBrios in my life. And he says, he makes like a big split across the room. He pushes everyone out of the way, and he runs toward this midget because he was so enthralled with the mitzvah that he was about to perform. And he says, he makes a big path toward this person, and he holds him up, and he says, Tafas oso nanas kelulav. He holds up that midget like he was a lulav. And he starts chuckling as he's saying the bracha, Mishana HaBrios. He was so excited. And the Maharsham says, I was watching this. Obviously, he was unable to stop this person in time. But he says, I was watching this. And he says, instead of digging himself a path of gold into Olam Haba for the bracha that he said with Kavana, he said he just dug himself, he just paved the most mohudar, the most golden path straight into Gehenna. That's what the Maharsham writes. An unbelievable story. And I'm reminded of that when the Beis HaLevi says, if we're so careful about the way we treat our lulav, our esrog, our mezuzah, and everything else that we interact with throughout the year, think about the people that we interact with. And it's a kal v'chomer, says the Beis HaLevi, we shouldn't even have to mention it, but sometimes we do. And none of us are malicious. We all have things to do and we're all busy. But take a step back and just think for one moment what it is that that person is going through. I actually had this experience on Friday. I know it's going to sound a little uncomfortable for people, but there was actually a homeless man walking down Peninsula Boulevard on Friday afternoon. I went out on Friday right before Shabbos to bring the garbage out, as every husband should, and I went outside, and as I'm bringing out the garbage, I noticed that there's something strange on my front lawn. Couldn't figure out what it was, and I see there are plastic bags out there. Then I go around the fence to look a little more closely, and I see that there was a homeless man who was sitting on the front of my house, and he couldn't find the bathroom anywhere because all the bathrooms are now closed. He couldn't go into a store. He couldn't go into a rest stop. He couldn't go anywhere. And I was horrified that he was using my front lawn, and I was about to yell at him or call the police. And then I said to myself, let me take a different perspective. I feel awful for this man. Not only is he homeless, but now even the small sort of comfort that he normally can rely on, that he can assume is going to be there for him, he doesn't even have. I felt so awful for the guy, and I felt terrible about myself. At least I didn't say anything. But then afterward, after he walked away, I said to myself, why didn't I offer the man something to eat? Why didn't I offer him something to drink? Why didn't I treat him like a mensch? And that, says the Beis HaLevi, if we're so careful about the way that we interact with mitzvah items, what about the way that we interact with human beings? Think about how difficult it is for some of these human beings that we interact with, and think about how we can be helpful to them in some way. So the Rambam finds this a little bit troubling because he says, after all, why do we have a concept of bizui hamitzvah? Who cares? It's just an esrog, it's just a lulav, it's just a pair of tefillin, it's a talis. What's the difference? They don't have feelings, they don't have emotions, and the Rambam addresses this question. And the Rambam says the answer is because when we give kavod to the mitzvah, it is not le'atzman shel hamitzvos, writes the Rambam, we are not giving honor to the mitzvah item itself, but rather lemi shetziva vahem baruchu. It's the expression of showing our appreciation for God Himself, who gave us this mitzvah. It is not that I love my esrog because an esrog is so lovable. It's my expression of showing love to the Ribono Shel Olam Himself. I have no other way of doing that, and therefore he says that is why we have a concept of bizei hamitzvah. The Magen Mishnah there writes on the Rambam, just reiterates what the Rambam says, but formulates it a little more, he crystallizes it a little more carefully, and he says, Shehem shluchav shel makom. These are like the messengers of God Himself. And he says, Kavana nishlach hu kavod asholeach. If you have a messenger that comes to you from a very important person, if you're disrespectful to the messenger, it shows that you don't respect the one who sent that messenger your way. And therefore he says, these mitzvah items are, so to speak, the messengers of God Himself. If you show a lack of respect, a lack of appreciation for the mitzvah item, then you are in turn really showing a lack of respect for the one who gave you that instruction to use this mitzvah item. And therefore the Rambam says, this is the reason why we have an obligation to make sure to show our respect for a mitzvah. This is all talking about the bizui hamitzvah aspect. Now what about after I'm no longer able to use this item? So this is described in the Gemara Maseches Megillah Daf Chav Vav. And there the Gemara talks about, this is a shaila we get every year. What do I do with my lulav and esrog? after Sukkos. You never get that question from a man. It's always from the woman of a home who is so sick of all of the clutter in the house and the husband leaving his dalet minim all over the place and not being responsible to put it in a safe, comfortable place that won't be in anyone's way. So we always get the question after Sukkos, what do we do with the dalet minim? We get the same question many times from parents of young children who have many pairs of tzitzis, and those tzitzis often get very dirty. The kids are sweaty, the kids are running around, and they always ask, what do we do with the tzitzis? Do I have to put them in Seamus? Do I have to bring them to shul? Now you're going to clutter up the Seamus, but maybe you're supposed to clutter up the Seamus. And this is a question, where do we draw the line? How do we figure out what is it that belongs in Seamus? What needs to be put away in a very respectful manner? And what do I have the right to just dispose of once the mitzvah is no longer going to be used for any particular purpose? So the Gemara Maseches Megillah writes what would seem to be an arbitrary distinction. The Gemara says there's a difference between Tashmishe Mitzvah on the one hand and Tashmishe Kedusha. The Gemara says Tashmishe Kedusha, and we'll say in a minute what is in that category, Tashmishe Kedusha are Nignazim, they need to be buried. Tashmishe Mitzvah, says the Gemara, once you are finished with them, they can be disposed of. No need to bury them, no need to put them in Shemesh, they can be disposed of. What is on this list and what is on that list, says the Gemara as follows. The category of Tashmishe Mitzvah, which is allowed to be disposed of once the mitzvah is completed, are Sukkah. So if you have a panel from the Sukkah that broke, or a panel from a Sukkah that you're no longer going to use because you purchased a new Sukkah and you don't think anyone else is going to use it, says the Gemara, you are allowed to dispose of it after Sukkos is over. A lulav, says the Gemara, once the mitzvah is completed, technically, I'm allowed to dispose of it. Now, as we said, many people have the minhag that they save it and they use it for the bir chametz, a beautiful minhag, but me'ikar adin, the Gemara says, one would be allowed to dispose it. My father, whenever he quotes this Gemara, always says, it doesn't mean you dispose of it with the dirty chicken bones and with the dirty residue from your dinner the night before, no. You dispose of it in a respectable fashion. You put it in a separate bag. You don't do something that's disrespectful, but you don't have to go out of your way to put the lulav in Seamus. And says the Gemara, shofar is also part of that list. If you have a shofar that's no longer going to be used, you're allowed to dispose of it once the mitzvah is no longer going to be done with it. And similarly, says the Gemara, tzitzis. If tzitzis are no longer going to be of use, one would technically be allowed to dispose of it. Now, the Mishnah Brura writes, there are those who are machmir with tzitzis and they go out of their way. You always have to take into account every chumrah is a kula. Every chumrah is a kula. Throughout life, not just in this sugya, but throughout life. You're going to put your old talis or your old tzitzis into the Seamus, well, the shul is then going to have to pay to get rid of it, to have it buried. So, it's always a discussion. What are you going to do? It's a nice thing to do, but on whose dime? So this is always a question that you have to take into consideration with every chumrah that you take upon yourself. Chumras are wonderful, but not when they cost other people time, money, or energy, or effort. A chumrah is nice when it's something that's personal. When a chumrah is going to cost somebody else an aggravation or headache, that's something that you need to think twice about. Is it really worthwhile or not? So the Gemara says that is all part of the list of Tashmishe Mitzvah. But then you have the second list, which is Tashmishe Kedusha, such as if I have an old pair of tefillin, if I have a mezuzah that I'm no longer using, if I have a mantle of a Sefer Torah, all of those are considered Tashmishe Kedusha, and I must make sure that even after I'm no longer going to use them, I cannot dispose of them, I have to put them into what we refer to today as Seamus. And the question is, this is such an arbitrary list. How do you know what belongs on A? How do you know what belongs in list B? And Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains as follows. Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes that the yisod, the shorish, the foundation, and the source of all kedusha, of all sanctity in the world, is divrei Torah. And therefore he says, anything that came in direct contact with divrei Torah is considered tashmishe kedusha. For example, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, if you have a mantle of a sefer Torah, if it's no longer being used, that was in direct contact with divrei Torah, therefore it needs to be buried, it needs to be put into Seamus. If you have an old pair of tefillin, tefillin housed divrei Torah, it has parshias of the Torah. If you have a mezuzah, says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, anything that had a direct or perhaps an indirect contact with divrei Torah themselves are part of that category B, which is Tashmishe Kedusha, and those need to be disposed of in a most respectable manner. However, he says, if I have a lulav or a shofar or a pair of tzitzis, As much as the Torah tells me I need to be engaged in all of these mitzvahs, once the mitzvah is over and I'm no longer able to use this item for the mitzvah, it loses its sense of purpose. It loses its sense of meaning. And therefore he says, since there is no divrei Torah that are directly a part imbued into this item, I would not have an obligation to be mindful after the item is no longer usable. My father explains in the name of Reb Soloveitchik that this is really the reason many people have asked this question in the last 8 weeks. It's a very painful question, and that is, people want to know, they've designated a room in their homes where they daven every day, which is a nice thing. The Gemara says, a person should always be koveya makom letfilaso. A person should always daven in the same place. Some Rishonim say the reason why is because it adds to a level of seriousness when I know this is where I sit, this is where I daven. It's not just arbitrary every day. I just walk into my house and daven wherever I want, walk into shul wherever I want. I go to a specific place in the house with Yishev Adas. I'm not distracted there. I'm supposed to be koveya makom. So many people have asked, does this room now turn into a Beis HaKnesses? Do I have to act in a certain way in this room because now it has converted itself to a voluntary shul because that's where I happen to be situated these days when we don't have the opportunity to be in a real shul? And the answer to that is no. But why? In a Beis HaKnesses we daven, and in my home I daven. So what gives a Beis HaKnesses its kedusha? Is it only because a minyan daven's there? No, that's not necessarily the case. What is it about a Beis HaKnesses that endows it with kedusha? And Rav Soloveitchik explained, based on the Rambam, that the answer is, what gives a Beis HaKnesses its status of kedusha is not the fact that we daven there, it's not the fact that a minyan says Kaddish, Kedusha, and Baruch Hu there. All of that obviously elevates the sanctity of the Beis HaKnesses, but the foundation of the kedusha is because there is a Sefer Torah in there. That's what gives a Beis HaKnesses a level of kedusha, which is why if somebody has a basement minyan, many people have minyanim Friday night because they don't want to walk to the local shul, it's a nice thing, and you have a minyan together, but you're not davening in a Beis HaKnesses. That is not the status of Beis HaKnesses. One has to actually go to a place where you have a Sefer Torah that will endow the makom with kedusha. The minyan itself won't give the kedusha to the space. It is the Sefer Torah, because Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes, all kedusha in the world stems from a Sefer Torah. And with that, we'll just close with one final comment, and that is, my father says very often, this is the reason why a Jew, even after they pass away, even after they're no longer alive, has to be treated with a level of kedusha, has to be buried with sanctity, has to be buried with respect. The reason why, as we know, is because every Jew is imbued with the sanctity of Torah. Every Jew, like the Gemara tells us, was taught Kol HaTorah Kula, Kolam Shenolad, before we were born. We were given that tremendous gift of being taught all of the Torah, the entirety of Torah. And therefore it is assumed that we all have a special level of sanctity. That being the case, even after the person is no longer alive, it's hard to put it in these terms, but it's very similar to a Tashmishei Kedusha, to an old Sefer Torah, that even after it's no longer being used, it must be buried. Even after a pair of tefillin is no longer being used, even after a mezuzah is no longer necessary, we need to make sure to bury it and to treat it with kavod, with the utmost dignity and respect, because we believe that it's the sanctity of Torah that will always prevail, that will always remain. And therefore it is assumed that although a person may have passed away and no longer has the opportunity to perform mitzvos the way they used to, a person no longer has the opportunity to do regular ritual life that they were usually experiencing on a day-to-day basis, we assume that they still maintain a tremendous level of dignity, a tremendous level of sanctity, because their entire mahus, because their body is made up from the kedusha, from the sanctity of the Torah that they studied, or the Torah that they were taught b'mei iman before they were born, and that is something that remains with them forever. I see that it's 8:59. I don't want to take away from any of Rabbi Leibowitz's time, so I'm going to hand over the shiur this evening to Rabbi Leibowitz. Thank you everyone for joining, and I hope you'll stay on for the next shiur that is about to begin.